Hello, true believers. Doing another podcast here, trying another audio setup here just to see if this works any better. I've upgraded my microphone that I'm using on today's podcast because I want to just try some things out. So, my good friend Mr. Taves, the original geek, the original Meet the Geek geek, has been just hammering me with articles to read, things to check out, and I've been checking them out, and I'm like, I don't know, he kind of sent some really interesting topics to me, things that I'm not totally aware of. I'm not as, it's not a savvy thing, but I'm not checking things out as much as I could be online and seeing kind of what's going on. Like, I don't really do that. I'm not one of those guys that's just, you know, roving around on the internet just looking for stuff and looking for information. I kind of don't do that. I kind of don't peruse articles or read newspapers or that sort of thing. I just don't have the time. Kind of more interested in doing things or creating things, but nonetheless, he sent me all this interesting stuff to look at. So what I've done is I kind of read through all the articles, and I promised Mr. Taves that I would discuss these on the podcast and kind of give you my two cents. Now, I want to put it out there very clearly that I have read the articles that he sent me, and I'm going to offer my unadulterated opinion on each of these articles, whether I know what they're about or not. So we're going to have a little bit of fun here today. And if you guys want to comment in the comment section, feel free. This is being put up on SoundCloud for a limited time, and is also put up on Podomatic, which is kind of my home, where I'm going to keep the majority of the podcasts. It's basically, the idea is that with SoundCloud, I have a limited amount of space. Their bandwidth and all that sort of stuff is kind of limited right now, so I'm hoping to work a deal with them maybe to make that my home, or I'll make Podomatic my home. So, in order of the articles that Mr. Taves has sent me these articles, I'm going to go through them one by one. Maybe we'll take a pause here and cue the theme music. Click, 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 and we're back. All right. Number one article from Mr. Taves that we're going to discuss today. Nick Cannon, the multi-talented gentleman. He's a rapper, producer, writer, blah, 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 all this stuff. He's got a resume the size of my brother's height. That's a horrible joke. Anyway, Nick Cannon, very famous, very popular person. He's kind of his finger on the pulse. I don't know who the hell this guy is. I'm not really interested in who this guy is. I was going to Wikipedia the guy, look him up. Yes, I'm a musician. Yes, I know music. But to be honest, I could kind of give a rat's ass about this guy. But nonetheless, he sent me the article to peruse. So Nick Cannon has called out Eminem in a rap battle. Yes, I've seen 8 Mile. I'm also aware of rap battles and what they mean and what they're for and what they do. And it's like a dance-off, but a rap-off, and Nick Cannon has called Eminem out on this. Wow. You're a ballsy guy, man. Now, I'm not a huge rap fan, but I do like me some rap. Eminem is the shit. He's pretty tough. He's good on his toes. He is able to rap quickly and to come up with the words quickly and on the fly, and he has a melodic pentameter to how he raps. And I'll admit, you know, when he's played on the radio or I hear him, I kind of listen. There's, you know, there's something about it that's pretty good. So, and I saw an 8 Mile, and 8 Mile is kind of an autobiographical take on his life. Probably a little bit fantasized, a little bit, but more or less, I know from talking to people that he did do rap battles. He is quick on his feet, and he is quite good at the rap game, especially the improvisational rap game. Now, myself as a vocalist, I've gone into practices, and I've improvised lyrics many, many times. It is a difficult thing to do. I would think that the rapping might be more difficult improvisationally, because there's a certain mathematical structure to the rap. So I would probably indicate that this is quite difficult, and I don't know who Nick Cannon is. I am guessing he is a rapper. I'm pretty sure he's a rapper. I've never heard any of his stuff, and this is my unbiased opinion based upon not knowing anything about who the hell this guy is. But I can't see someone taking Eminem out. He would have to be extraordinary to even go toe-to-toe to keep up with him, never mind beat him in an all-out rap battle. So, I don't buy this. I don't believe that Nick Cannon could get the job done and take out the little chocolate-covered peanut. Don't think he can do it. Don't think he can do it at all. Next item on the agenda. This one I have a bit more, a bit more interest in, or a bit more of a position on. Now, this is something I've kind of thought about. It's been in the back of my head occasionally, but I never thought about it in this respect. So, the basis for the band called Destruction. I'm not overly familiar with the band called Destruction, but I think I'm familiar with the bassist. He looks kind of familiar. Don't have the name in front of me because I am driving. So, yes, this podcast is called On the Road. It means I'm driving. My notes are sparse, and they're taped to the console of my car so I can still maintain, legally I can still drive and not be distracted. So this bass player is basically criticizing other bands, particularly metal bands, that play backing tracks when they play live. There are certain metal bands, what they do when they play live is they'll have a pre-recorded section of music. Usually, something that goes against metal, I guess. So it might be a little piano overture that kind of plays to introduce something. Imagine King Diamond. He's got all his, he's got like voice actors and all that sort of thing. And he kind of records in a studio and writes a scene. And then generally what it does, you know, it plays out. It'll play out at the beginning of a song or in the middle of a song or at the end of a song, basically telling a story. And with him, it might be voice actors, you know, discussing grandma going up the stairs. And then different voices going on. And then there might be like a little piano interlude thing there. Kind of like a more horror-themed thing going on. You know, that kind of deal. And then what they'll do is those segments will be played. They'll be pre-recorded and played during the concert. Other bands will do similar things like that. But in general, in pop, particularly in pop, with the electronic revolution that is EDM or electronic dance music, is that music is pre-recorded because you have one person on stage spinning the record and playing the music. And many of the sounds are samples that are pre-recorded that are then mixed or produced or played or performed, if you say, by the artist. So with pop acts, a lot of them, what they will do is the drums, if you take someone like St. Vincent, for example, I believe this is how she records, is she just puts on a drum machine, picks a beat, and that's what she writes to, and then that generally is what ends up on the album, I believe. So I don't think it's the pre-recorded drums. Now, we talked about this on a podcast before. Go back, go listen to it. That podcast is called The Death of the Modern Drummer. Check it out. There's a whole diatribe about what that's all about. But in general, most bands will have a pre-recorded track that they play along to in some way, shape, or form. It might be a background guitar playing. It might be background vocals playing, or some such thing. Sometimes, some bands, what they'll do is they're a rock band, but they have keyboards on a couple of tracks that they've done. They might have background singers, another guitar player, you name it. What they'll do is they might have that musician behind the stage, not visible from the audience, just to thicken up the sound. But anyway, it happens a lot in all kinds of music, particularly to the extreme with EDM. But, so what this guy's complaining about on the metal side of things is what I was mentioning at the beginning there, was that there'll be like a piano interlude or, people talking back and forth, like that sort of thing. He's totally against the idea of backing tracks of any kind, pre-recorded tracks that are played. He thinks it is not real, it is not authentic, and it is not what people have come to the show to pay to see. And he refuses to allow it to his brand to allow anything like that. And it is just blasphemous to allow the practice. So that's where this guy comes from. Do I agree or disagree? Jeez. You know, in the studio, you can do some pretty extraordinary things. And oftentimes, because a recording lasts forever, and that instance of the recording will be played over and over and over again, hundreds or millions of times, the authenticity or the quality, I guess I should say, of the recording is very, very important. So any little mistake will be heard over and over and over and over again. Also, the quality of something will be heard over and over and over again. And generally, I have to say that most bands, if not all bands, none of them record their albums live. They're all layered, they're all multi-tracked. The guitar player will play his part, but then the producer will go in, the guy that's doing the mixing of this stuff, and might take the guitar track and double it. So he'll basically copy and paste the guitar track that was recorded, take that track, copy a second copy of it, lay it on top of the pre-existing guitar track so you get that doubled sound. So electronically, what you're doing is you're making it sound like two guys are playing the same guitar track. And then what they might do in the studio is they might take that track and they might tune it down a half a note or half a step. So it's more, what's happening is that when they play together, when those two guitar tracks play together, they don't sound identical. They sound more like a harmony. They may even bring it up an octave, up or down an octave, like you never know, something like that. So it happens all the time in studio. I don't know of any bands that record it live straight to tape. They don't add any tracks. They don't, if they're a four-piece band, there is only four instruments playing. Nobody does that anymore. So if this guy's saying there's a loss of integrity, I don't know. Like in the studio, there's so much that's done, that's fixed up, that's cleaned up, that's tweaked. Is it unauthentic to have a backing track playing? I don't know. I don't know where I stand. I think backing tracks, particularly in metal, when it is an introduction to a song, especially in, and I'm going to King Diamond here, I'm going to bat for King here, is that they enhance. It's sort of an introduction to the song that is not really meant to be, the introduction is not really meant to be musical. It's just sort of this is what the song coming up is going to be about or leading up to, and then you go into the song and you just metal out, like balls out to the wall. So I kind of think that it's needed, and if you didn't have it, you know, are you going to drag a grand piano on stage to play this, or like, you know, 5 or 10 different voice actors to, you know, to recite the lines again? Like, I don't know, when we're talking about musical theater in terms of theatrical bands, I don't know how you go without it. I think you should do as much as you can live, and you can punch it up with a couple of things. That's my opinion. In terms of integrity, if you are using backing tracks to double the guitar, just have another guitar player there. You know, bring your tech guy on, introduce him on stage. Hey, you know, we brought our guitar tech out to add to the band sound, whatever. I think I'd rather hear the musicians playing it, ideally. But I mean, for backing tracks, for like, you know, like King does, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. So I don't agree with the guy. Next article, which I'm, the actual article itself is about this con called Space City Comic Con. I think it's called Space City Comic Con. And I'm entitling this section of the podcast, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. I'm going to try to avoid being controversial here. But there is a certain convention that runs in a certain city that I have attended and been a guest at. Been someone, like, on a panel and conducted business at this con. This con suffers a lot of negativity, and the people that run the con are very good at shutting people up that speak negatively about the convention. Now, I can understand in this day and age, there's haters out there that will try to destroy anything, good, bad. It's irrelevant. Some people just live and breathe to ruin things and trash things and be negative about things. And I fully understand that that is a way things are. But in relation to what I'm talking about, this Space City Comic-Con just recently happened. I think it's very, very recent. They had what I see happen at the convention that I attended. Very, very similar scenario. So at this convention, most of the article I read revolves around the cast of talk about a short memory, man. That biker show that's on TV that has Ron Perlman on it, Sons of Anarchy. Sorry, there you go. So Sons of Anarchy, very, very popular show. This con roped up a whole bunch of people from the show to be at this convention. When the convention came around and the various people from the show, actors and whatnot, arrived at the convention, they had a hotel booked for them. They arrived at the convention and so they arrived at the hotel to book into the hotel, and they were told that the credit card to pay for their hotel stay was inactive, and that the actors and whatnot would have to pay cash in order to secure their rooms and pay for their rooms. The actors were unhappy, but anyway, there's way more to the story than this. Through the course of events, the actors off this show, or the people of this show, started leaving, and some of them stayed, some of them didn't. But the ones that stayed then proceeded on to, and I could be getting parts of this story wrong because I read the article and I'm talking about it. So if I get some stuff wrong, I apologize. But the general gist is, once they get to the con, some of the programming they were involved in, where they go in a room and you're going to go talk about that. One person that was responsible for, I think, the PA in the room or the microphone or the projection of onto the screen or whatever, is one of the techie people involved in one of their presentations in one of the rooms, refused to go forward with the panel because they had not been paid, and they refused to go on until they were going to be paid for the panel. Well, there was nobody there to pay for the panel because the people in question, the people that, you know, were running the convention, were nowhere around. And there was nobody that was going to be able to pay them. So what ended up happening, I think more people... Anyway, so the long and short of it is, these guys committed fraud. They set up the Sons of Anarchy, probably as the biggest, you know, stars of the convention, and didn't have any money to pay them. Somehow they, you know, nothing was... I mean, I don't know how con appearances work and how these people get paid to be at the con, if they're paid some money up front or not, or paid off the back end. I don't really know. But the gist of the whole thing is that they defrauded a lot of people that went to the convention, that went to the convention because these guests were going to be there. And some of the guests just took off and left. And the ones that were left behind that to attend the panels, they didn't have the multimedia presentation they were supposed to have. Maybe the microphones weren't, whatever. Microphones weren't set up or whatever the deal was. Again, I kind of went through the article briefly before speaking about it now. So I went through a very similar experience at the con that I was a guest at. And what happened was, rookie mistakes were happening at this convention, or that's what me and my friends allotted this to, is, you know what, this is the first time you're doing something of this scale, and every year the scale of it got larger and larger. And to be honest, these things cost a lot of money, and they're very hard to put together, and there's a lot of balls that you're juggling. And it's not easy to put one of these conventions together. Let's be completely honest. Not an easy thing to do. So the one that I was involved in shall be remained unnamed. But if you know who I am, you know exactly which convention I'm talking about. And exactly the people I am talking about, is that we try to offer some constructive criticism to help them. Because in the end, the geek community where I live, it's a strong one. People look out for each other. Yes, there's some negative people out there that will try to, you know, diss the convention or people putting things together. But all that negativity aside, it's a very big community here in my city, and everybody looks out for each other and everybody helps out. And if you're looking for people to help out for free and work your convention and try to get it off the ground and try to keep things running smoothly and that sort of things, you're going to have so many people offering their time for free to help out. And what we did, my friends and I, is that we try to offer some constructive criticism. It wasn't criticism at all. It was constructive criticism that offered a couple of solutions to some of the nagging problems that occurred at the convention that we were a part of. There was a lot of things that didn't run smoothly. There was a lot of missed opportunity financially for the convention. There was a lot of missed opportunity on the advertising of the convention. And there was a lot of missed opportunity in multiple respects. So what my friends and I, the way we looked at it is like, okay, great. You know what? Some of this stuff's not working. Rookie mistakes. It's growing too big, too quickly. Let's all help out to make this better. So we offered some very smart solutions. I'll admit my friends offered way more than I did, but they offered some great solutions. Here's how we can help you with some of these things. Here's some ideas to look at for the next con and things to do a bit different that will be probably financially cheaper, to pull off, and provide a better experience for the audience, to make it easier for the guests coming in, and to make it better for everybody all around. And there were very, very good ideas. They weren't ideas that, you know, were suggested that they should, that they have to happen, but just suggestions. Hey, look at this. Maybe this will work for you. Maybe this will be, you know, what turns it around for you guys. And helps out and makes it easier. And basically the idea was, let's transition every year and make it better. Make it bigger, better, but also make it more fiscally responsible and make it better to have guests want to return. And, you know, like, you know, make it be the event that people want to be part of. And I don't mean the people coming and paying their dollars to go in and see the guests that are there, but the guests themselves. Make the guests want to come back. And when this was done, it didn't fall on deaf ears, that's for sure. What happened was my friends and I were banned from the event for having an opinion at all. We didn't do so in a negative way when we contributed our opinions. Our constructive criticism is what we offered. And, you know, we offered an opportunity to talk about it at length, to be more involved in setting it up, to be more involved, to just help out and say, you know, like, you know, use us. Like, we're not charging for our services. We're offering a way to help you. And no, this person got very angry, went very public with their anger over us and other people that had offered a similar constructive criticism. And they basically just banned us from it. You know what, your opinion is moot. We don't care what you have to say. And on top of that, we also hate you and we're going to make sure we tell everybody in the community about what horrible people you are. So this con, this Space City Comic-Con, probably went through a very similar thing. It seems very, it's funny, the details that, you know, the details that I did glean from the article were so, so similar to a lot of the things that happened at the convention that I was a part of, that it just, you know, it's really, really sad. And now, hence the Ding Dong the Witch is Dead title to this section of the podcast, the one of the problems related to this convention has decided to part ways with the convention, and I couldn't be happier. Yeah, that's all I gotta say. If you're not happy with something, it's always best to leave. And our friends and I had decided after that convention, they don't want us. They're mad at us. They hate us. They're calling us down and calling us names. And, you know, not only do they don't want to accept our help, which is fine, but they also made a point to let everybody know how much we sucked. And, you know what? You've struggled with this convention for years, and you can't do it anymore because you can't stand the negativity. Well, just got to say, you got to look in the mirror. We tried positively to impact the con and do things for the con. So, Space City, looks like, sounds like, and this is just my humble opinion, that something similar happened. And in the end, you've made a reputation in the industry, much like the con I attended, of how you treat your guests and how you treat the people that come to the door. This convention is a business, I understand. But to be a viable, sustainable business is about treating everyone with respect. And if the profits are not there, and if the profits are decreasing, and if you're having trouble getting guests to come back, it all comes back to a respect. Last article. I'm 2 seconds from home here, but I'm just going to cover it real quick. Great, great documentary called Searching for Sugar Man. I highly recommend this to anyone and everyone, music fan or not. It's an amazing documentary about this musical performer called Rodriguez, who, I guess the 70s it was, took a run at being a music star and getting his brand out there. this guy came out and the critics came out and said this guy was a genius, on par with Dylan, possibly better than Dylan. And what happened was the guy faded into obscurity and many presume died. Rodriguez is coming to perform in my great city. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really hoping I can find a way to get my ass out to the concert and go see him. Great musician, incredible story. And now, you know, 20 years later or whatever it is, he's getting a second chance at continuing his career. And wow, just great stuff. Anyway, I'm going to sign off now, keeping the podcast short for the length of my car ride home as part of the tenets of this podcast. I'd like to talk to you guys later. Please comment on the bottom. You can comment on the Podomatic page or on the SoundCloud page. My email address is in there on both places. You can contact me through either of those great podcast services. You can also contact me through my Facebook page. That is Sean McGinnity. You can also reach me on Twitter, Sean Geek. Look for me there. And again, it's S-E-A-N-G-E-E-K. My handle on Facebook is the same. You can contact me through there. You can also find me on my Reverb Nation page under Sean McGinnity again. Anyway, I'm really looking for some comments. I'm hoping you guys like what I'm doing, and I'd like to see what you guys think of the podcast, see what you think about the content of the podcast, suggestions for future content of the podcast, and like to know if you like me talking here by myself or if you want me to get some guests on, because I have some ideas for maybe some potential guests down the road. Anyway, talk to you next time. Keep it real.